Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Welcome back to another amazing episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast, and I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable. Today, we're very excited to chat with Kelly Paulson, who was previously VP of Coaching and Development at Allen & Garrison, and she recently launched her coaching business where she's a self-titled coach, dream chaser, and most importantly, ass kicker. Thanks for coming to the podcast, Kelly.
Thanks for having me, Bruce. Woo! Excited to be here.
Always. We're so excited to always have our guest. So, as with all of the podcasts, before we begin, we would love to hear you give us a quick background of how you ended up in HR, and also how did you end up becoming a coach?
Sure. So I think, like a lot of people who end up in HR, I was a fan and still am of psychology. So I was a psych major, thought that I was going to become a psychologist at some point. My sister is a psychologist. And then when I graduated, I wasn't ready to go right into grad school. And, you know, when you think about what could I do next, a lot of people said, you know, people with psych backgrounds can end up in human resources. So truth be told, I started recruiting and in nonprofits and did more and more generalist work throughout the earlier half of my career, but I hated HR at that point. I bought into the story of that we create policies and everyone hates us and that it's not important work. So shame on me. About halfway through my career, when I was working at the Philadelphia Zoo, I worked for a man who did it differently. And I thought to myself, okay, if human resources work can be done like this, it can change a business, and it's something that I'm curious about and willing to sink my teeth in further. So from there, in 2008, I went into the ad world, and that was where I found my people. The people in the advertising space are just really passionate and dedicated, and then as the HR person in that space, you're able to really flex your creative brain in a different way than I had been able to earlier in my career. So at that point, I read a book called Dream Manager by an author called Matthew Kelly. And the whole idea of the concept is that people have personal dreams and goals that they're chasing outside of work. And if the workplace could support them in going after those goals, it would be creating all the more meaningful relationship for them with their employer. They'd become better employees, more loyal, better performers. So I started that program at Brownstein when I was there. And then that came with me to A&G. And it was there when I, you know, fell in love with the work of coaching. So I went through a program to become a certified professional coach at IPEC. And then really started my side hustle from there. And, you know, honestly, even once I read that book probably 10 years ago, it was, oh my gosh, if this is a career, I need to be doing it. And so many HR people are coaches. They just don't necessarily define it that way. So that's just a little bit of how I landed where I am now.
Great. Thanks for that. So today's topic is unlocking employee potential. And I think you may know a little bit about this. But for the listeners,
I hope so.
or it wouldn't make a very interesting podcast if you didn't.
No.
So for the listeners out there who have heard things like this, what does that mean? What does it mean to unlock employee potential, and why is this important?
So regardless of, I think, human potential, right? So whether or not it's employees, obviously, you know, this is an HR-focused conversation, but if we spend our time within organizations telling people what to do and how to do it and not allowing them to make decisions for themselves, not allowing to test and grow and try different things, we're really shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, people have this amazing ability to test and grow and push themselves and try new things that enhance what the business is able to deliver. And I think a lot of businesses spend their time putting their heads down and focused on getting new business and delivering on what we promise, which no doubt is important, but they miss out on the opportunity of letting their people take the reins even more so, whether it's specific to their career. But if they're taking the reins in their career and learning and growing, they're impacting the business in a positive way as well. So I think, you know, it impacts the bottom line for sure, whether or not organizations realize it or focus on it.
Great. So now that we know what it is, one of the things that we really like to do on this podcast is to not just talk theory, but to talk practice.
Yep.
And really build a mm-hmm. framework and provide a framework for our listeners. So let's just say there are a bunch of listeners out there that are saying, okay, Kelly, great. Unlocking employee potential. Sounds awesome in theory. But before anything happened, how do I even get buy-in to make this culture shift at my company? Because I know I definitely want to get into the plan, but how do I get my leadership team, my executive team, and just the company in general to embrace this so that it's something that they actually want to allow me to do and have resources to actually execute on?
Absolutely. Buy-in is key with any area of focus, truly. So I'd say there are a bunch of different ways you can do it. I think multiple paths. And I say some of them, it's the research and data. Who are we kidding? Right? Like, you need to have the stats to back up what you're suggesting, especially when it comes to C-suite conversations. To point out to your organization, if we don't do this, this is what turnover numbers will likely look like. Like, you know, getting the stats in front of them. If we don't create the opportunity for people to get promoted, to learn, to push themselves, this is what it's going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and how it's going to impact the business. So really getting very granular about numbers and the stats. I also like to do, I guess what I like to call covert missions, right? So under the radar, creating opportunities for people that I know I could do without the attention of the C-suite, and then sharing those stories. So if, for instance, is someone in passing or in conversation mentioning to me, you know, I'm a project manager, but I really want to be a writer, and knowing that those are both opportunities under the realm of that organization, saying, you know, talking to the manager, trying to find opportunities, or encouraging that person to say, talk to your manager, talk to a person on, you know, the person who leads the writing team, see if you can get opportunities. And doing a lot of that under the radar so that inevitably when that person, and I've had it happen in, you know, a multitude of times, transitions into another position and the person's, you know, leader or manager or head of the office says, oh, I didn't even know that they were interested. It's like, oh, well, here's a case study on what can happen if we give different opportunities to people when they voice what they're interested in and we support it. Because, you know, that's something that might be able to happen without saying I need a huge amount of financial backing on the front. But again, then you've got success stories under their own roof to prove your point.
And to get this buy-in, you mentioned that the HR person should have data. How much data? And just to go into mm-hmm. that a little bit more, what are some of the metrics that I should be showing or that the HR person should be showing to their leadership team to say, this is why we need to unlock more employee potential, or this is why we really are hurting from not unlocking the employee potential, and then here are the areas of the business that could be improved upon?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, I try to be as succinct yet powerful as possible. Again, not to knock any of my C-suite friends, but attention span may or may not always be there. So I would say, you know, powerful, but can be in a variety of different realms. So I already mentioned turnover, but can you do some research on what's attracting, and I don't want to use the M word, but people of a certain age bracket or population to organizations at this point. So you can use research that's out there on talent acquisition and what individuals are saying they prioritize most or are attracted to within an organization, because we know there's so much work out there about if there is opportunity for me within that organization, if there's potential for growth, that is something that attracts people to an organization. So I think not only turnover numbers, but also the talent acquisition piece, and then looking at what you've got under your own roof. So do you have access to, depending upon the size of your HR team, literally pull quotes from exit interviews. Any information that you can get your hands on, employee surveys, where you might have questions that even if they're not directly correlated to learning and development or potential of employee growth, you can 9 times out of 10, if you go through some of the comments section, find things that are applicable. So historically, I've done a little bit of here's the research out in the world, kind of a keynote slide, and then here's what's happening under our own roof. And these are direct quotes that came from employee surveys or came from exit interviews. And it is impacting us now, whether or not we're acknowledging it or aware of it.
Okay. So this is great. Thanks, Kelly. You've given me the opportunity to get buy-in. You've shown me how I can leverage data so that I can prove my point. Great. Now, where do I start? How do I start creating this plan to really figure out how I can unlock the potential of my employee base?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll be as annoying as possible and say it depends, because each organization is a little bit different. And I think that you need to get an ally at the senior level, but how you define senior level could mean a lot of different things, right? Like there are organizations where CEOs are incredibly involved in this stuff, and there are organizations where CEOs would have no idea what's happening, though would be happy to support. Right. So it depends on who's the right ally and partner for you in order to bring something to life. But I do think it's someone at the executive level. So, you know, whether it's talking directly to the CEO, whether it's working with the CHRO, again, it depends on the size of the organization, but getting an ally and telling this story. Right. So using the statistics that you've gathered, making the smart case for why it's important and getting that buy-in from there. And then I have always liked to, and I believe this is a pricing strategy thing in general, options, right? So saying, here are 3 different ways I believe we could start to attack this internally, impactfully. Some of them may require funding, some might not. Some of them, it might be funding at a lesser level than others. And then saying, here's what I think will be most impactful. How can I expect your support on this? I need a champion internally because I can't speak for everyone, but I have been there for sure where I am the internal champion on X, whatever it might be. It's great if one person in human resources is super enthusiastic or passionate about a realm, but if you can't get the execs or some senior level support on that front, it's going to be really difficult to bring it to life in a meaningful way that's going to impact lives. So whether it's, you know, the managers, the leaders. So I've, you know, historically, once something's been given the green light, so to speak, before anything would go live to employees, it would be sitting down with leaders and managers and saying, okay, here's something I'm proposing. What's your reaction? What do you think could get in the way of this? And how are we going to solve this challenge together so that they feel a part of the solution as much as someone on the human resources team does without asking them to donate a ton of their time to the efforts necessarily?
So once you get buy-in and have that initial conversation with your other stakeholders, what are some of the real-world examples that you've done previously to actually unlock employee potential?
Well, I talked a little bit about some of the, I've always been a fan of, I've had a lot of department changers. That's not the word I want, but you know what I mean? People who have said, and first things first, back to basics. I think the organization, whoever they may be, need to talk about how important helping employees achieve their potential is to them. And I don't necessarily think it needs to be something coming from the CEO or something coming from the leader of an office, but it needs to be something that is a living, breathing conversation that happens regularly, that employees hear people from leadership and beyond talking about examples, but also talking about how it's a priority for them. Because I think it's then where you create that space where people feel comfortable asking for things. So I think for me, I have always been someone who has been vocal about the importance of the impact of giving people the opportunity to lean into whatever it is they're looking to lean into in a big way so that people are comfortable asking and comfortable putting themselves out there. Because if people don't understand that it's an okay thing to ask, doesn't mean you're always going to get it. But if they're not looking to take charge of their own careers, it's not going to move in the way that they want it to, because I don't care how amazing your boss is. You care more about your career than anyone else. You can have the best boss in the world, but if you're not looking to drive that along with them, you're not going to get to where you want to be. So I think first things first is being vocal and having those conversations and letting the employees at large know that it's an area of focus and that we're looking to do things. And then, you know, listening to them when they ask those questions and being really mindful of and sharing those stories. So if, for instance, if I hear a few employees talking about an interest in wanting to learn web development for whatever reason, you know, it's not their area of focus, but they believe it will help impact their abilities with in terms of conversations with clients or internally, brainstorming, what have you, taking that back to leadership and saying, here's what I've heard, here's what I think we should test. And I've always been a fan of testing things. So whether it's saying, you know, we should, and around that, I'm very passionate about, obviously, is coaching. And most recently at A&G, we launched a performance conversation tool that we built internally. And the move was towards regular ongoing coaching conversations, as opposed to those once a year, roll your eyes, everyone dreads them, performance management approach. And that's to say, as an organization, we believe this is important. You know, we are making space for you guys to have these conversations, and the HR team is going to support you in delivering them. So I created content. I literally created like conversations that they could have. Like, here are 5 questions that you could focus on, and they were happening monthly. So I think that's on a larger scale, but I think any opportunity you have when you hear, like, I might hear someone that has a true interest in something, and I'll say, oh, have you talked to your manager about that? And they look like deer in headlights. It's hearing that and one, coaching that person through like, well, what might happen if you did talk to your manager about that? And some of it is giving people, it sounds silly to say, but permission to have those kinds of conversations can be really impactful. And that's not, you know, launching an initiative. That's just seizing those moments when you hear them. And I also like the idea of experimenting. So if you want to test out something, you want to launch a new program and people are hesitant or they're not sure about going for it, then, you know, say, okay, can I have this department? Or can I have 20 participants just to test it out for 3 months, 6 months, whatever you think would be most valuable, so that you've got a test case. Because I think then you, again, you've got real stats that you can share. When you choose to, because inevitably, once your experiment goes wonderfully, you'll want to go live throughout the entire organization. You've got the story to tell already about how successful it was with the small test group.
So you actually already answered part of my next question, which was, because this seems so much of a customizable or a custom solution where you're asking each individual employee, I'm assuming you're asking each individual employee, mm-hmm. about their potential. I was going to say, how do you manage it all? And I think you did a good job of explaining that you do case studies. But that actually brings up another question, which I'm interested in. And that is, once you have this test case, whether it's a department, it's a small group, it's a division, maybe a specific location, what is unlocking employee potential look like? What are you benchmarking that against? Is it that people are happier and that it increases engagement? Is it that you were able to put people in different positions where they were able to move laterally or horizontally in a way that they weren't able to before? They're making new career moves. What does that look like for people who don't know?
Yeah. So I do think you hit the nail on the head with a few of those. One, obviously, engagement scores. If people who, and especially if you're an organization who does those surveys and has those scores on a consistent basis, if, you know, during the test time frame or, you know, when you've got a few of those case studies to talk about, scores skyrocketed. And again, some instances you've got comments specifically calling out the why. Sometimes you do not. But that is a strong indicator. And I do think, yes, the fact that there have been more internal promotions, that individuals, and again, sometimes you have people who say, I was on the cusp of leaving. Had this transition, be it promotion, transfer, whatever you want to call it, not occurred, I probably would have been gone at this point. And again, not everyone's comfortable saying that out loud. But I think the more instances you have of, and I think a lot of that does come through in employee surveys, but I do think in one-on-one conversations as well. So it's, you know, being really mindful and listening for those stories, because they're out there. Sometimes they don't come to you directly. And I feel like I've always tried to keep my ear to the ground. And then when I hear the stories, to amplify them to the right parties. Because if they're not coming to me, chances are they're not going to the CEO as well with that kind of information. And if that's the person that needs to hear it in order to be willing to invest in more opportunities. And when I say invest, like, you know, it can vary, right? It could be conferences, it could be in-house learning and development initiatives, or it could just be a mentoring program that you house internally that may or may not involve, quote, budget. It may be hours of people's times, which obviously I know there's money associated with that, but there's just so many different ways that you can bring and create opportunities without a huge financial investment. It's more mindset shift related in those instances.
So this conversation that we're having right now is all about potential. You listen to blogs, other podcasts, videos, articles, you go to SHRM conferences. It's all about potential. But this brings up an interesting question for me, and that is, what if the employees don't want to unlock their potential? And does that tie back into making the recruitment process better so that you are hiring people who have the potential to be great? Because there seems to be some type of disconnect. And I'm asking this because I'm sure, hearing your last answer, there are a bunch of HR people that are saying, I get it. I would love to do this, Kelly. But when I look at half of my employee base, I don't really see a lot of potential there. Or I don't see a lot of people who actually want to harness their potential, and they just want to be the status quo. So how much of that is on the employer? How much of that is on the actual employee? And if you have the wrong people, is that really a fault of not recruiting for the best type of people to be able to do this strategy and execute on the strategy? I know that was a lot.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting question. And it's a conversation I've had. One, yeah, you're not changing anyone who doesn't want to change. So let's be clear about that. If a person does not want to make change in their behavior, they're not going to do it. Whether they're a rock star or reaching for the next level in their career or not. So I think there's that component for sure. If the person does not want to make change, chances are they are not going to. If you as employers decide that their performance is not where you need it to be, then the change will more than likely be coming from you. And obviously, I hope through the right channels and the appropriate conversations and so on and so forth. But for sure, if people don't want to make change in their lives, they're not going to. I don't care if you're the best manager, leader, or HR person in the world, you can't force it. So absolutely on that front, there's the ownership on the part of the individual. Your next part is interesting because I feel like there are so many organizations out there now who talk about we want the best and the brightest, right? This whole organization is full of people who are just completely amazing and going to set the world on fire. And someone that I had worked with previously, I can recall her sending me an article, I believe it was in the New York Times, and I can share it with you, Bruce, about the idea of leadership and about how the entire world right now talks so much about how everyone needs to be a leader, and how that's impacting even, you know, students as early as grade school on, that if you don't have leadership potential or leadership qualities, you feel like you can't make it anywhere. But honestly, I think organizations need a mixture of everyone. Because if you have rock star leaders who want to take the reins, and there are hundreds of them surrounded by one another, that creates a challenge as well, because there may only be so many places that they can move into, or the pace with which they want to move is faster than that of the organization. Now, I'm a firm believer in tour of duty, right? Like, nobody's going to come in and work for an organization forever. And I think, you know, if you have given them an opportunity and they choose to move on, you know, best of luck to them, and be really thankful that you had your time with them, and don't turn it into a sour grapes kind of situation when someone who's great moves on. But I do think so many people are concerned with, we need the best of the best. And what they end up doing is hiring these really high energy, great talented people who they can't keep busy or challenged for long enough to keep them for a long period of time. So I believe that there should be an interesting mix of people. And again, I'm not saying people who don't deliver. There are people who are solid, who get their jobs done every day. They do it pleasantly. They do not hurt the organization. They deliver, you know, and there's a place for them in organizations. And too often, at least in a lot of the environments I've been a part of, we lose sight of that. And we look for everyone to be, you know, the number one leader, but we can't all be that. So how are you creating the right opportunities for the people who want it and supporting the people who may not want to set the world on fire, but still want to continue to push them as well? Because you owe it to them as their employer to at least offer the opportunity, even if they don't want to take it.
Hey, podcast listeners, we're about halfway through this episode. So now it's time for a word from our sponsor. But don't worry, we'll be back.
Are you trying to make your HR department more data-driven, but there's not enough time in the day? Are you tired of managing all your HR data in messy spreadsheets? Then you need EmployeeCycle, the real-time HR dashboard helping small and medium-sized companies use HR data to achieve workforce goals. EmployeeCycle pulls all your HR data from your HR systems and creates a beautiful web-based dashboard, making it easier to identify problem areas and track trends. You can even give your CEO and leadership team access so they can stay updated on workforce insights all the time. Learn more at employeecycle.com and sign up for your free demo today. Now back to this amazing episode.
So the next question that I have, and this is more so for me, is how do you measure potential? Or how do you see potential? What is that? What in a person says this person has untapped potential that they're not using, or what in a person will show you, you know what, they have the potential to actually grow into the job or the role or that you're looking to hire them for, or better yet, they're an existing employee and you mm-hmm. know this person has the potential to actually move up and advance their career and actually take on a leadership role.
Yeah. I think getting to know that person and getting to know one, and I'm not saying you have to do it on an individual basis, right? This is not all in HR. It's training the leaders to know what to look for as well, training their managers to know what kind of conversations to have. But the people who are asking for more, the people who are instead of, you know, saying, okay, this is what you asked me to do, I'm going to do it, who are coming back with different ideas, the people who, you know, consistently attend when you offer learning and development offerings, who consistently raise their hand and want to be involved in other things, even though oftentimes, and, you know, I think this is something that can be really frustrating for people. We've got jobs to do, right? And our jobs may take up 99.9% of our time during the day. Even if we want to learn and grow and do more, it's hard to raise your hand and find and seize those opportunities when you feel bogged down and what, you know, you need to be doing for your day to day. Which is where it's the importance of the organization supporting, creating time and space in someone's day to be able to find those opportunities. So I think it's getting to know individuals, and it's by no means on the HR team alone, but it's teaching those leaders and managers to know what kinds of questions to ask, to have those conversations with people about, you know, all right, what do you want to be doing in the next 3 to 6 months? And then listening and looking for those opportunities internally and give them the chance. And I think even if your gut says, I don't know if this is the right opportunity for this person, you have to give people the opportunity to give it a shot, or at the very least have the conversation with them a little bit more about what it takes or where you think they might struggle. Not in a way to intimidate them from going for it, but I think too often managers and leaders shy away from that, and they don't realize how important and meaningful that can be for the individual. If someone takes the time to say, hey, I hear you saying, you know, you want to lead this next major project, and that's awesome, and I think you'll get there someday, but I don't think you're there yet, and here's why I don't. And here are, you know, I've seen you miss some deadlines and not communicate well about that. And something that we really look for in a leader of a project is being able to handle when we might not be able to deliver on time, and here's how you're going to talk about it. So to get really tangible and have those real conversations with people as well, Because if you're not willing to do that, they're never going to learn and grow and get to that next level if you just shy away. And I don't think people do it out of malice. I think they want, you know, you don't want to hurt someone's feelings, but you're doing them a disservice by not being willing to have the real conversation with them. Do it in a kind and intelligent way, but you're being kinder by having the conversation than not. And also, if you say it's not for them in the next 6 months there for whatever reason, and they decide it is for them in the next 6 months somewhere else, you know, then they need to know that too.
So lack of budget in HR is always an issue. So for the listeners out there who have totally bought into everything that you're saying, and now they actually want to put some money behind this and some resources, mm-hmm. is this mm-hmm. coming out of an existing employee engagement budget? Or is this a new line item on the HR spending budget?
It depends. It depends on what exists. I mean, so organizations work so differently. So in my experience there, it was a learning and development budget. To be clear, the learning and development budget may or may not have always existed, right? So that doesn't, just because it doesn't exist doesn't mean you can't sell it in. I'm not saying it's going to be an easy sell, but it's doing what we talked about earlier, sort of getting those statistics and painting the right picture so that people understand the importance of investing. But I do think, you know, some places have this, you know, employee engagement, define it however you want, right? Like it could be events, it could be learning and development, it could be all under one umbrella. So I don't necessarily I don't get caught up in the semantics of what budget it's in. It's just if there's money. And I do think there's the interesting part of that. If you're in a smaller place where there's a budget that you can, you know, take from one to support the other, that's cool. But if you're in a larger place where talent acquisition has a budget and then employee engagement has a budget, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do so. Whereas in my background, I've always been on smaller teams for the most part. So you've been able to say, okay, you know, if I can save X here, I hate to go events because I know that's always associated with HR, but I think like if I can, from the holiday party, get us in, negotiate at the event place or whatever it is and save us $2,000 here, I want it to implement this program in particular. I'm going to bring in this speaker. We're going to work with this coach. I think that can be valuable as well. Again, anything that you can do to show that you're not just throwing money at things for them to be a solution, that you've thoroughly thought it through, that you've done the legwork, you've done the research, you've had conversations, and you've thoroughly investigated the approach that you're suggesting, just leaves your leaders feeling a little bit better about whatever investment choices they're making.
And as we all know, one of the reasons why it's difficult for HR to get budget for a lot of things is because sometimes it's difficult to tie a hard ROI to that line item. Mm-hmm. So for the listeners out there, knowing that they're going to have to prove or at least say that they're going to get some type of ROI, how do they align this line item to overall ROI or revenue? And what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so I think, again, there's a variety of different ways to do it. And it depends on, from the start, what you're measuring now, and then that conversation that you had to sell something in, how you're going to choose to measure it. So be mindful of your measurements before you even go in to have any conversations with a leader to say, here's what we're looking at now, right? There's this employee engagement score. And sometimes, you know, it's something that you can tie, you can do a survey directly tied to an initiative that you've launched. So we're going to do a, you know, leadership training, and it's going to be a 6 week long thing, and we're going to bring someone in. We're going to do a pre-conversation with, you know, a survey with the leaders and the people that report into them. And then we're going to do one immediately after. And then we're going to do 3 months after that and take all of that data and explain it to you and talk about its impact. And within that survey, does this impact your willingness to remain within the organization? Do you feel like it was a smart investment? Has this changed how your leader is interacting with you, and in what way? So again, asking all of those questions, but it can vary depending upon what you look at now. Because I also get the idea of, you know, survey fatigue. You don't want to be asking things constantly, where sometimes people are just like, all right, already. You've talked about this. You've asked about it. We want to see action and not answer any more surveys about it. We want to feel the difference and stop being questions and, you know, have those kinds of conversations. So I think there are so many different ways too. And one of the things that I have always found valuable, we have a small team of employees that they used to joke were like the HR henchmen that were on the ground with people to say, so there were four employees that would be eyes and ears and meet with HR as well as leaders on a frequent basis to say, here's what's going on, right? Like, people are feeling frustrated with how you handled the announcement of this new biz win or didn't handle the announcement, right? And getting that information. And then I also have found having that team of people run either brainstorming sessions or sessions where, truth be told, employees can go in and vent, but do it in a way that is meaningful for them and people feel heard, but it's also future focused. It's not just a bitch session, pardon the term, but like that, how can we, that's great. It's out there. What are we going to do about it? And then come back to the HR team with that information. So I also have had the benefit of working within organizations where there is an analytics team, where there are people who are very entrenched in this work. And I'm a relationships person. I leverage those. And in the same respect, if you are looking to do something that you've not done before and you're not sure how to measure it, leverage your relationships, right? So whether it's in-house or outside of there, and especially if you're launching something new and perhaps it's a tool where you have an outside partner, I have always made my partners earn their payment, I suppose, every step of the way, right? So educate me, educate my team why this is important. How are you going to help me talk about the success of this launch as a partner?
So the last question that we have about unlocking employee potential, for the listeners out there who really want to implement this into their business, they've heard everything that you've said, they've done, or they're at least planning to do everything that you said they should do, get the buy-in, figure out how they're going to measure ROI, they've already chosen the employees that they're going to do a test case with. What are some of the things that they should avoid? And what are some of the pitfalls that maybe you went through that you could give the listeners to make sure that they don't go through the same thing and make this process as smooth as possible? Because we always hear a lot of people always talk about the sunshine and rainbow side of it, but what are some of the potential issues that they could fall into and how do they overcome that?
Of course, yeah. Be mindful of not trying to do too many things at once. I think, especially when you're new somewhere, right? I've talked to so many HR people who are like, I don't get it. I have all of these great ideas and I pitch them and they're not ready. And I ask, well, how long have you been with the organization? And it's like 2 months. So it's, you need to invest in the relationship and earn the trust of the leaders that you're working with. So, you know, be there, show them that you're mindful of numbers, show them that you're mindful of the ROI and how the people side of the business is as equally as important to the, you know, the people side of the business is the business, right? So how it impacts the numbers. And so showing that first, and then I'd say, don't try to do all of it at once, right? Don't launch five test initiatives simultaneously. You want to focus and pick your battles. In the same respect, for me, what has been a challenge is I, you know, become the quarterback of things, which is great. It's wonderful if one person is really passionate about this, but there are a few initiatives that I can think of. Like, I launched a recognition program and it was great. And, you know, like a lot of things, it does well in the beginning. People are excited about it. But if I did not have the other champions or advocates, so if I could go back, I would say before launch, I have identified maybe five people within the organization at a variety of levels who get the importance of employee recognition, who understand, you know, how important it is, what it will mean to people, and how to help facilitate bringing it to life within the organization so that it doesn't rest on one person's shoulders. I think, you know, It doesn't matter how great you are at your job, you can only be in one place at a time. And, you know, the more advocates and champions you have for the initiatives that you're testing and piloting, the better off you will be, one, for your own sanity, but it also impacts the success and the story internally of whatever it is you're looking to focus on. So I think finding the partners and finding them earlier on is something that I wish I had done a few different times in the past to have been more successful.
Great. That was awesome. And listeners, I hope you were taking notes, because Kelly really, she really taught a lesson. She taught a class just now. So I now want to transition into talking about a talk that you gave at Disrupt HR, which was awesome. And we'll put a link in the show notes in. But your title was called Let's Make People Uncomfortable. And there are a few things that I would like to cover from that talk. So the first thing you said, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's a win for the organization when you make the C-suite feel uncomfortable. Why is that?
So I think that means that you're pushing. If you're pushing for, whether it's a new initiative, like some of the things that we may have been talking about today, or pushing back on them about things that they, you know, unlimited vacation. I use this as an example just because I've done it. Some people hear that and cringe and freak out and think it means this major thing. And I'm like, all right, well, what if we called it something different? Like, what if you looked at it from a different perspective? You know, I just think that too often people get to the C-suite because they've been talented and people listen to them and their initiatives or, you know, whatever they're looking to do have been successful. And people, then they're surrounded by yes men sometimes. Yes men and women, pardon me. People that aren't willing to push back on them. And I think then they become stuck in their own ways and they're not doing what they need to be doing for the organization if that's the case. So the more that you can push that team to question their thought process on something or think differently about something or try to see it from another viewpoint, it adds immense value for everyone else and the organization at large.
Another thing you said during that talk is that HR needs to be willing to experiment and push the boundaries. Can you explain how that happens and why that's important?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that Disrupt in general, right? That whole event was too often. And I feel like this has been, you know, I've been in HR for 16 years and I feel like it's never changed. It's this, there's still the stigma. There's still the, we're creating the rules, we're enforcing the rules, and that's what we're there to do. And there's so much more. And I think that I'm not knocking policies. I'm not saying that they don't have their place within an organization, but there's so much more opportunity on the people side of things to have a larger impact on the organization, to focus on possibilities and to test and experiment. Because I think it's not something that's generally associated with the HR department or HR people. And I think if they are at the forefront of thinking that way and talking that way and behaving that way in an organization, it sends a real message to everyone else about, you know, what's acceptable behavior and what, you know, we expect of you and how you would be supported if you chose to do so and whatever it is your field or background might be.
Perfect. And thanks for that. So now we're going to go to one of my favorite sections of the episode, which is the real, the random, and the ridiculous, where I ask you a real question, a random question, and of course, a ridiculous one. Are you ready?
Oh, Bruce, I'm ready for you.
All right. So the real question, I think you may have heard this podcast before, but I really need to know, do you like bread pudding?
I've never had it. I know. Oh. I know. Oh, I knew I'd be a huge disappointment to you in this.
You could have just lied and said you did.
I could not, Bruce. I am not that person. I could not lie. I like rice pudding. I mean.
Nope, not the same.
But I'm trying.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what?
You're just going to hang up right now.
Nope. I'm not going to hang up. I'm just going to have to introduce you to it and make you a believer.
Fair enough.
Done. Sending you an invite right after this. All right. So, random question. What is your favorite color and why?
Green. I tend to go a lot for green. One, Kelly green, right? So there's that. And I think it's funny, as I've been redoing my site recently, I have a strong reaction to it. I always like cooler colors in general. And it's something, I think it's a calming thing, but I also get with any color, you can like amp them up, right? So there could be a green that's really high energy, you go neon, or there could be like low key. So I don't know. And then I guess there's the whole nature side of things, grass and, you know, this, even the smell of that, all the sensory things that go along with green for me. But I do think it started with Kelly Green, because so many people still, you know, when you're younger, it's like, oh, Kelly Green. So I guess that stuck.
Nice. And then last question of the section, the ridiculous question. What are some of the ridiculous things or reasons why companies say that they're not able to unlock the employees or unlock the potential of their employees?
Probably put it on the employees, right? To say like there isn't any, which is just bullshit. right? Like,
right. Just taking the easy way out.
Right, right. Put that there. That's probably the most absurd I've heard. And I get, you know, that when there is a financial investment, places are nervous. But if they're not willing, just like, you know, we talk about making people uncomfortable, if they're not willing to take a risk, think about all the businesses and organizations who haven't and where they are now, right? The examples of the places like, you know, Kodak or Blockbuster and the challenges that they face. So if you're not willing to put yourself out there and try, you're not going to get the gain that comes along with it. And so, yeah, I'd say the places that aren't willing to put their money where their mouth is on that front, or blame the employees, which is just nuts.
Got it. Last question of the interview. Favorite and least favorite part of HR?
Least favorite is easy. Anytime there's a layoff scenario, you know, firing people is one thing, but, and usually they have, usually always they have behaved in a way that warranted that. But layoffs, that's not always the case. And it's just heartbreaking. Best part, I don't know. I used to just think making job offers were the greatest things, but now, I think it's, and rightly so, since we've talked about it for the last hour, seeing something click for someone, right? Like watching someone grow from an associate level to a director level and just, you know, seeing them be that most badass version and know that you had a part in that. Even if it was just some, you know, peripheral support along the way, I think that's really the most meaningful part for me, watching people grow.
Kelly, you are so awesome. And this has been another amazing episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast. We need to give you a round of applause. This is so awesome. Thank you so much for coming into the studio. This was great.
You dropped a lot of gems. Thank you, Bruce. You are equally as awesome. Oh,
no, everyone on the podcast makes me awesome. And I just try to suck in all the awesome juices and energy. And hopefully I'll be as awesome as the guests. So, Kelly, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at www.kellypoulson.com. And then all the usual suspects, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. I'm always happy to connect with people on any of those platforms. And then, Bruce, I feel like we should mention Disrupt HR.
Yes, please do. Please give a plug.
November 15th is the next Disrupt HR Philadelphia event. And you may be familiar with the individual who will be emceeing because it's Bruce.
Yes, it is. Oh, you're making me blush. It is. It is.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. You're going to crush it.
I'm
really
excited too. I hope I don't disappoint.
Of course not. It's not even possible, Bruce. Come on.
I hope I don't disappoint. Well, thank you. Glad you're plugging it. And no, seriously, if you can make it to the Disrupt HR event in Philadelphia, November 15th, please do. It's an awesome event. It's great networking. But most of all, you're going to hear some of the most amazing talks about disrupting the HR industry. Well, Kelly, thank you again. This has been awesome. And listeners out there, just very quickly, if you're tired of pulling the same HR reports over and over, you probably should automate that process with an HR dashboard. So you should go to employeecycle.com and sign up for a demo. Also, if you like this episode, please share it and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. and subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast player to never miss another episode. Well, folks, we did it again. Stay tuned for next week's episode. And for the HR pros out there, keep hiring, training, and retaining the best workforce possible. Later, kids.